All right, let's jump right in. We're going deep today. Your notes from Dr. Robert Vannoy's lecture on the Kings of Israel and Judah. It's a wild ride. Drama, intrigue, power struggles, ancient history, but with a modern feel, wouldn't you say?
Oh, absolutely. These stories, thousands of years old, and they still speak to us. Power, faith, consequences, it's all there.
Okay, so let's start with King Jehoshaphat of Judah. He's considered, like, a godly man, but some of his decisions, especially that alliance with the Northern Kingdom, well, they had serious consequences.
Yeah, it's a complicated situation. Keeping peace with the North, good idea. But Jehoshaphat, he went beyond that. He created this close alliance with King Ahab, even arranged the marriage, his son, Jehoram, to Ahab's daughter, Athaliah.
And Athaliah, if we're connecting the dots here, she's probably the daughter of Jezebel. Talk about a power couple. This alliance, it must have caused quite a stir.
Oh, for sure. In fact, the Bible even tells us Jehoshaphat got a talking to from a seer named Jehu about this very alliance. A warning sign, if you ask me.
And those consequences, they really come to a head. When Jehoshaphat gets dragged into this war with Ahab, against the Arameans, right? But before they go charging into battle, he wants to consult a prophet. It's interesting, isn't it? Jehoshaphat, he seems more cautious, more spiritual than Ahab, even though Ahab's ruling the Northern Kingdom.
Right.
Which is, you know, usually associated with all that idolatry.
Right. Shows how complex these characters are. Just because someone's in a position of religious authority doesn't mean they're living it, you know?
Yeah.
Ahab, on the other hand, he just wants to get his way. He gathers 400 of his own prophets. And surprise, surprise, they tell him exactly what he wants to hear. Go to war. Victory is yours.
Classic yes men, huh? But Jehoshaphat, he's not buying it. He requests a prophet of the Lord. I bet Ahab wasn't too happy about that.
Not one bit. He's forced to call in Micaiah, prophet known for his honesty, and his not-so-favorable prophecies. Ahab actually admits to hating Micaiah, says he always brings bad news.
So Micaiah shows up. You can feel the tension, right? Ahab's like, okay, should we attack or back down? What happens next?
Well, Micaiah, you know, he's probably sensing the hostility. So he starts off sarcastically, predicts this huge victory for Ahab. But Ahab, he's not fooled. He demands the truth, the whole truth, from Micaiah.
And that's when things get really interesting. What does Micaiah reveal?
He shares a vision from God. It's a vision of defeat for Israel. Their army scattered, like sheep without a shepherd. A totally different picture than what Ahab's prophets were painting.
This brings up a big question, for me at least. What does this tell us about prophecy? How are we supposed to know truth from falsehood, especially when everyone's got their own version of the truth? Feels very relevant these days.
You're hitting on something important there. Micaiah's story, it shows us how crucial it is to seek truth, even when it's uncomfortable. And it reminds us, those in power, they don't always have our best interests at heart. Sometimes what we really need is that dissenting voice, that challenge to the status quo.
We should always question, right? Think critically. Don't just believe anyone who claims to have all the answers.
Exactly. And this brings us to another fascinating part of Micaiah's vision. He sees this lying spirit sent by God to influence Ahab's prophets. This raises some big questions about God, free will, all of that.
Yeah. If God sent a lying spirit, does that mean he's the source of deception? That's a tough one.
It's a question theologians have debated for centuries. One way to see it is this. Ahab's prophets, they were already prone to deception. The lying spirit was more like a catalyst, pushing them further down the path they were already choosing.
So God didn't create the deception, but allowed it, maybe as a consequence of their choices.
Precisely. God's will versus free will. It's a tough concept. Imagine a parent letting their child make a mistake, even though it hurts, knowing they'll learn from it.
It makes sense. We have the freedom to choose, but choices have consequences. And sometimes those consequences, they serve a purpose, even if we don't get it right away.
Exactly. So this brings us back to Jehoshaphat. What did he do after hearing Micaiah's prophecy? Did he take the warning, or did he ignore it and march alongside Ahab into disaster?
Back again for more on the kingdoms of Israel and Judah. Last time, we left King Jehoshaphat with a tough choice to make. That prophet Micaiah's warning, or his alliance with Ahab. So what do you think happened?
Well, it might surprise you, but knowing Jehoshaphat, I think he probably went into battle with Ahab. Maybe he felt bound by that oath, or maybe he thought things would turn out okay, you know?
Yeah, it's like sometimes even the most devout people, they struggle with those commitments. But like Micaiah predicted, it was a disaster for Israel. Ahab was killed. Jehoshaphat barely made it out alive. But those consequences of his alliance, oh, they were far from over.
Absolutely. And those consequences, they really hit hard with Jehoshaphat's son, Jehoram. He takes the throne after his father.
And remember, Jehoram, he's married to Athaliah, Ahab's daughter, probably Jezebel's too. With family like that, you can only imagine the influence, right?
Oh, it wasn't good, that's for sure. The Bible actually straight up calls Jehoram a wicked king. He followed in the footsteps of those kings of Israel, doing all sorts of things the Lord wasn't happy about.
Okay, so wicked king. What are we talking about here? Just bad decisions or like full-on villain-level stuff?
Oh no, this is bad. Like really bad. Second Chronicles tells us one of the first things Jehoram does, kills his own brothers to solidify his power, you know.
Whoa, sibling rivalry taken to a whole new level. Looks like he learned a thing or two from Athaliah's family. Do you think it was all her influence or was Jehoram just, I don't know, inclined towards that kind of thing?
Tough to say for sure, but the text definitely hints that Athaliah had a hand in it. It's a tragic story. This seemingly good lineage corrupted by all that negativity.
And those choices, they had consequences. Big ones. Jehoram had those revolts, Edom and Libna, during his reign. And then there's that horrible illness that struck him down.
Oh, it wasn't just any illness. Chronicles describes it. A disease of the bowels, so bad that it caused his death after 2 years of suffering. And here's the thing. Nobody mourned him. It's like his own people were relieved when he was gone.
So that alliance Jehoshaphat made, even with good intentions it led to all this. His own family devastated, turmoil in Judah. Really makes you think about those long-term impacts, you know? Even the choices we make with the best intention.
For sure. But in the middle of all this turmoil, we get a new player on the scene. One who's going to shake things up in Israel and Judah. Jehu.
Yeah, Jehu. This is where things get intense. You mentioned before, he was the one who like called out Jehoshaphat for that alliance with Ahab. So what was his role in all this?
So Jehu, he was a military commander. And get this, Elisha the prophet, he anointed Jehu as king, fulfilling this old prophecy against Ahab, Jehu's mission. Destroy the house of Ahab. Get rid of Baal worship, divine judgment, political maneuvering, and, well, some brutal stuff.
Okay, not messing around then. So how do you go about this? Like, strong speeches?
Yeah.
Peaceful protests?
Subtlety wasn't his thing. He went for a bloody coup. Killed King Joram of Israel, Ahab's son.
Yeah.
And Ahaziah, king of Judah, Jehoram's son. All in one go.
Wow. Talk about a power move. Taking out both kings, erasing Ahab's lineage, just like that.
It was calculated, ruthless. And he didn't stop there. He went after Ahab's whole family, even some of Ahaziah's relatives, too. Total destruction of Ahab's line, just like Elijah prophesied.
Okay, but what about Jezebel? She was a major player in Ahab's story. What happened to her?
Let's just say it wasn't pretty. She got what was coming to her, according to prophecy. Thrown from a window, trampled by horses, they left her body for the dogs.
That's a brutal image. Really shows you, in the ancient world, power was a dangerous game.
But Baal worship, did Jehu wipe that out too?
Oh, he did, and he was clever about it. Called a big meeting of all the Baal worshippers, pretended to be a believer himself. Once they were all gathered in the temple, boom, his soldiers slaughtered them. Baal worship in Israel was pretty much done after that.
So, a man of action. He got things done, but his methods... pretty hardcore.
Yeah.
Does the Bible paint him as a hero, or is it more complicated than that? That's where it gets interesting. He did what God wanted, destroying Ahab's family, stopping Baal worship, but there's this sense maybe he went too far. The prophet Hosea, later on, he criticizes Jehu, talks about the bloodshed of Jezreel, like even good deeds, when they get extreme, can have bad side effects.
Do the ends justify the means? It's an old question. Jehu wanted to purify Israel, sure, but that level of violence... even for back then, it's unsettling.
Exactly. It shows us even those chosen by God, they're still human. They can make mistakes. Let their zeal turn into cruelty. Jehu is a warning. Power, even when it's used for good, can be dangerous if it's not kept in check. What do you think? Did he cross the line?
Ooh, that's a tough one. Easy to judge from where we sit now, but we got to remember the context. It was a brutal time. Violence was almost expected in politics and religion. Still, what Jehu did, it's a lot of bloodshed. Shows us, even when we're fighting for justice, we gotta be careful. We can become the very thing we're trying to stop.
That's a great point. Jehu's story, as dramatic as it is, it's just one part of the bigger story. His dynasty went on for 4 generations, but eventually the northern kingdom fell apart. More turmoil, more decline. Meanwhile, in Judah, things were going in a whole other direction.
So what happened next? Jehu's kids, were they as ruthless, or did they try something different? And Judah, did they manage to stay out of the chaos that swallowed up the north? I want to know what happens next with these two stories.
Well, hold on tight. We're about to dive into the reigns of those who came after Jehu, explore those prophecies that shaped their lives, and uncover the events that led to the fall of the northern kingdom. Get ready. because things are about to get really interesting.
Back for the final part of our deep dive. Last time we talked about Jehu, his rise to power, and that brutal, well, purge of Ahab's house. I'm really curious about what came next. Did all that upheaval actually change things for good, or was it just like the start of even more turmoil?
You know, Jehu's revolution, it definitely left a mark on Israel. His dynasty, it went on for four generations, but it wasn't all peace and prosperity. His son, Jehoahaz, he had to deal with constant threats from the Arameans in the northern kingdom. They were caught in the middle of this power struggle.
So even after getting rid of Ahab's family and all that Baal worship, Israel still couldn't escape the violence. Makes you wonder if anything can really break those patterns, you know?
It's a deep question, for sure. And it seems like the biblical writers, they were thinking about that, too. It's not just about swapping a bad king for a good one. There's more to it. Social justice, staying faithful to God, the whole idea of power itself. But let's get back to the story. Jehoahaz's son, Joash, he becomes king. And his reign is interesting. It's a mix of political stuff, divine intervention, and, well, kind of a missed opportunity.
Missed opportunity, huh? Tell me more about that.
Okay, so during Joash's time, the prophet Elisha, remember him? He was key in Jehu's rise while he was still around. And right before Elisha dies, he gives Joash this symbolic prophecy. Tells him to hit the ground with some arrows.
Arrows? Why arrows?
It was symbolic, see? Like, each arrow hitting the ground represented a victory over those Arameans. But here's the thing. Joash, he only hit the ground three times, then stopped.
What? Why? Was he tired out of arrows? What's the deal with stopping at three?
Oh, Elisha was not happy. He saw it as a lack of commitment. Like, Joash wasn't fully going after the victory God had promised. He even told him if he had hit the ground five or six times, he would have completely crushed the Arameans. But because he quit early, his wins would be limited.
So he basically messed up his own success because he didn't go all the way with the prophecy. That's got to be frustrating to know you could have done so much more.
It's a big lesson about obedience, following through. And not just blind obedience, but recognizing when there's a chance to do something great and having the guts to seize it.
Yeah, sometimes we hold ourselves back, don't give it our all. We see that in Joash's reign, right? Some victories, but not the total victory that was promised. But there's more to Joash's story than just the Arameans. He also has this crazy encounter with Amaziah, the king of Judah.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. Amaziah, he's feeling pretty confident after winning against the Edomites. So what does he do? He challenges Joash to a battle. Pride goes before a fall, as they say.
So what happened? Big epic battle.
Not really, no. Joash destroyed him. Captured Amaziah, even looted Jerusalem. Took all the gold, silver, treasures from the temple, the palace. It was a huge humiliation for Judah. And it showed how strong the northern kingdom was under Joash.
Wow, a total power move. Looks like even with all their troubles, the northern kingdom was still a force to be reckoned with. What about after Joash, though? Did his son keep up that power?
Well, Joash's son, Jeroboam II, he turned out to be one of the most successful kings in Israel's history. He expanded the kingdom, brought back its glory, and they had this time of prosperity. His reign actually fulfilled a prophecy from Jonah, son of Amittai.
Wait, Jonah. The Jonah. The one with the whale. He was a real person.
Yep, real person. That mention in Kings. It shows us Jonah wasn't just a legend. He was a prophet who lived during Jeroboam II's time. Adds a bit more to the history, doesn't it?
I love how all these stories connect. It's like peeling back layers and finding all these unexpected links. But Jeroboam II, his time wasn't perfect, right?
True, true. While everything looked great on the outside, you know, expanding borders, prosperity, there were problems underneath.
Yeah.
That's when we get the prophets, Amos and Hosea. They were around back then, and their writing is full of criticism. They called out the social injustice and religious hypocrisy in Israel. Even with all the wealth, they weren't happy.
Sounds like the saying, all that glitters isn't gold. What were Amos and Hosea so upset about, specifically?
They were angry about how the poor were treated, the greed of the rich, and the religious leaders. They were all about empty rituals. They wanted people to go back to real faith, a faith based on justice and caring for others, not just showing off how pious you are. It's a message that still matters today.
It does. It's easy to focus on money and power, forget about those who are struggling. But what Amos and Hosea are saying is, real prosperity. It's more than just stuff. It's about fairness, living right, taking care of each other. So what about after Jeroboam II? Did his successors listen to the prophets? Fix things?
Sadly, no. His son, Zechariah, he only lasted 6 months as king before he was assassinated. That was the end of Jehu's dynasty. And after that, chaos, violence. Four of the next five kings were assassinated too. And within a few decades, the Assyrians, They were a powerful empire back then. They conquered the northern kingdom. That was it for Israel's independence.
So even with all those reforms and victories, Israel couldn't survive all that internal fighting and pressure from outside. It shows even the strongest kingdoms can crumble.
That's right. The northern kingdom had a tragic end, but Judah's story goes on. They managed to avoid getting conquered by the Assyrians, stayed independent for a while longer. But their story, that's got its own ups and downs, and eventually they had to deal with a new empire, Babylon.
Wow, this has been quite a journey, the kings of Israel and Judah. It's incredible how much these ancient stories still resonate. You know, they show us the challenges of leadership, how our choices have consequences, and that constant battle between power and doing what's right.
Absolutely. And the story doesn't stop here. There's still the prophets, the poetry, all those wise sayings.
Yeah.
They all offer different views on this wild period of history.
So, and everyone listening, keep digging. Read Kings, Chronicles, check out Amos, Hosea, Isaiah. See what makes you think, what makes you curious. It's an amazing journey. And hey, maybe we'll do another deep dive on one of these topics soon. Thanks for joining us. Keep exploring.